Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party.
CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the stolen ancestral territory of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
Listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree.com/cjsfradio and learn more.
Sorry, just leaning back in my chair here.
By visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-CJSF. Welcome, welcome, everyone, to Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco.
And, yeah, we're here every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Hopefully you all know the drill by now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you weren't here last Tuesday. Had to completely solo the show. No DJ Star.
Wow, I was not expecting a call out so soon in the program, and it's fine. I was away with my family, so. Mm-hmm.
I told everyone, I said, you were in Prince George, so.
Oh, doxing me as well. Thank you. So.
But we are back with a topic.
I guess we're a little rusty at this right now. It's been a whole week since we've been, or 2 weeks, I guess, since we've done our last show, but we will be talking about a book, a very unique book, later on in the program. It is called I Who Have Never Known Men. It's by Jacqueline Hartman. And we're going to dissect it a bit.
We're definitely going to have spoilers as well.
Yes.
Major spoilers. So sorry if you have read this, or if you haven't read this book and want to, because we will be talking about all the spoilers.
Yeah, we will try to warn, I guess, right before we drop a massive bomb, but can't promise anything. So right now we will say there are going to be spoilers for sure.
So if you don't want to hear them, then you can switch off and then come back for our music.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, the first song is by Ora Kogan. Obviously, her album's coming out on March 13th, so get ready for that. Her genre's kind of been described as gothic country or psychedelic folk. I personally really like her, and I'm looking forward to the new album. It's called Hard Hearted Woman, and this song is called Bury Me.
Enjoy.
Thank you. around you.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. You're tuning into Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I am DJ Star. That last song you heard was called New Life by Dunia. And before that was Yase Yase by Gabriela Olivo. I really like that song right now. She's from Montreal. I think it's a new single of hers. It's very good. And before that was Oiseau Migrateur, sorry for that pronunciation, but it is by Nana Quinn. Also a nice little song there. And it is time to begin our discussion on I Who Have Never Known Men by Jacqueline Hartman. And another warning, if you have not heard us before the break, that there will be spoilers. It's kind of a book that's difficult to talk about without spoiling anything.
Yeah. There's going to be some major spoilers, so if you want to read this book, please tune out.
If you want to read this book and you want to hear some spoilers, that's fine too. You can stay with us. The book in itself is kind of spoiling itself the whole time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the author, Jacqueline Hartman, just a little background on her stuff before we get into the book. She is Belgian Jewish. She survived and escaped the Holocaust and originally published this book in French in 1995 when she was 66 years old. And when you read the book, at least for me, it gives me a feeling of a book that is much older than that and much more timeless than, I guess, kind of recent. It feels more of a classic to me. But it's actually only becoming more popular now. I don't think she even knew of how famous it was getting because she died somewhat recently. I actually don't know when, but it's okay.
2012.
Yeah. Okay. I Who Have Never Known Men was the first of her novels to be translated to English. In her life, she studied both medicine and psychology, which is kind of interesting because DJ Coco and I... health science and psychology is kind of like a little parallel slightly.
We've got our backgrounds to tackle this discussion on, so
it's combined minds. Hopefully we can analyze. And she also worked as a psychotherapist for a while and eventually became a psychoanalyst, which is very, very like a huge influence in this book. And all the while she was still writing novels. I think overall she's published over 15 of them. She wrote a lot of articles on feminism. And when I heard the name of this book, I thought it was a nonfiction book on feminism. So I wasn't super interested in it because I find reading nonfiction feminist books just really depressing because of how true and interconnected they make all these issues, mm-hmm. which, you know, just is a bit hopeless sometimes. But
where did you hear or find this book?
Actually, my mom gave it to me for Christmas.
Oh.
And I wasn't too excited when I saw it because I was like, oh, like I've already read too many nonfiction feminist books. Like, I'm kind of done. But it was a very nice surprise. And anyway, yes, the author was also really interested in physics, science, and science fiction. And so for a few of the themes of this book, there's a lot. I wrote down a lot, and so did... Well, DJ Coco wrote down some.
No, I don't. No, I didn't.
Sorry.
just expose me.
So sorry. I think I covered,
DJ
like...
DJ Coco did not actually write a lot. She doesn't know what she's doing. Go ahead.
I didn't see, like,
go
this
ahead.
Part. Okay. Okay, anyway, so it's more of a dystopian novel. It's more of a dystopian novel, science fiction, aligning with her interest there. A bit of a psychological horror, like it gets into, you know, what is at the crux of the human psyche and, you know, when will it break or bend. Also very much so exploring the human condition and what it means to be human, what kind of desires or needs or wants make us human. And I think that's also shown through how much we relate to the book.
I think for the what makes us human part, we had a couple points. I think for me, when I was reading it, it was definitely the themes of a lot of curiosity throughout, especially with the protagonist view, and also some community as well, which we can get into.
Mm-hmm. And I have the need to accomplish or create something keeps popping up in this book. Loving one another, wanting to know what love is or what love feels like. Desire, imagination, and just simply thought, thinking about something, getting lost on a train of thought. There's also themes of death and hope, which is kind of interesting because my friend from Lithuania said this quote to me the other day. I don't know where it's originated from, but they said, "Hope is the last thing to die." And this was said in a very different context than what we're talking about. But we were waiting for our other friend to join a video call, and we were like, he's not coming. And then he was like, "I'm here." Like, what?
Very deep quote for quote for that.
But anyway, so yeah, hope is the last thing to die. And I feel like that really resonated for this book as well. And we'll get into that a bit more. Could be a spoiler, but now we're going to get into an actual overview of the plot. So for those of you who haven't read it but want to know a little background before we just start diving in, basically it begins with a girl. I think she's on the cusp of being a teenager, maybe a bit younger, and she's explaining what her conditions of life are, and they are being imprisoned inside of a cage in a bunker with 39 other grown women. Nobody knows why they are there or how to escape. There's guards there. They're completely silent, but they keep them captive and administer punishment whenever necessary. The women are given the same food every day, have the exact same sleeping schedule. Touching one another is forbidden. You know, they're really not allowed to commit suicide or anything. I think that might have happened once in the book.
Yeah, someone tried to hang themselves and the guard they just know instantly, even when you move over in the night, and they just even just sound the whip and they'll go sit back down. And there are consequences, even if you do it, that they'll whip you if you do try. So,
So a very, very monotonous lifestyle. They're given the same food every day, but with that 1 ounce of autonomy that they're given, because they are able to cook the food, they're fighting every single time about how they should cook it, what they should make, because that is pretty much the only outlet of creativity or something new that they're given to do every day. And one day a siren goes off and they're living like this for many, many years. I think their narrator is just starting to try to figure out how to get out of there, why they're there. But, you know, I don't know if those efforts would have been fruitful anyway, because we don't know if there is a way to get out. But luckily, they're able to free themselves after the siren goes off, because all of the guards leave and they escape into this world above ground, where they seem to be the only ones who are actually left alive there.
That's mostly the description of the book, where, you know, you don't have to be spoiled for. And I think it is on most of the cover as well, so no spoilers there, but then I have some points that we'll definitely be spoiling, and we'll also be talking about it. So if you were to read the book, what happens now, so spoilers, they escape into this world purely by luck, and they thought, I don't think they thought anything, they just want to leave the cage. That's just their first thought, which is pretty human-like, and the world is just a landscape of, you know, trees, there's some rivers, but there's no signs of any human civilization at all. You know, there's some sprawling hills to the side, just goes on forever. There's no animals, nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting because when they first escape, they're thinking like, oh, what if we find a town nearby? Like, let's track down a road. And like, as you, the reader, are also like reading through them, like escaping, you're pretty much thinking the exact same things, or at least I was. It's like, okay, they need to find a town. They need to like get help from somewhere. And then, yeah, they eventually find that that's not a possibility. Like DJ Coco said, there's no human civilization.
Mm-hmm. Because even when they got out and they saw nothing for miles, they even just thought about going back in for a second, mm-hmm. you know, and all just huddling together. And so I feel like there's also that theme of like, very herd mentality. You know, everyone wants to stick together. No mm-hmm. one wants to make an opinion that separates you and it feels scary. So they're all just kind of standing there together, all these women. Also, they're all varying ages as well. So there was, I think there was some women who were as old as 60, 60, mm-hmm. 70. And the protagonist was the youngest. So she was around, I think, just around her 20s or late teenager years.
Yeah, when they escape, I think.
Mm-hmm. So they continue on because, you know, of course, they got to find something. They can't live in the cage forever. I mean, they've already been here for decades. So they're taking their sweet time. They're looking around, finding rivers, drinking from water, because these women who were taken to the bunker, they do remember life before being at the bunker because they were all just randomly taken and put in this bunker. They must have also drugged them as well, they said. And some of their memories gone about how what has happened, but they still have their knowledge with them, so they know how to make a fire mm-hmm. and things like that to keep them alive. So they start traveling, and it gets pretty dystopian at this point. And major spoilers, but they're now finding other bunkers exactly like them with groups of, you know, the same cages with dead women. You know, their entire group of women died in the cages, or men, entire groups of men that died in the cages because they couldn't escape. And of course, all the guards are gone, so no one could feed them, and mm-hmm. they just left there.
And it's the exact same number as well of women and men, and the only kind of variation is either the gender of the people who were found dead by, you know, the original group of women, or, you know, there's some, like, maybe this bunker has coffee or maybe this bunker has bread. Like, pretty much that is the only variation, because as they're traveling along, they're also taking food from each bunker a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much the most of the plot of the story is, you know, getting out this bunker, finding that, oh, you know, there's other bunkers and nothing's here mm-hmm. on this entire land. And I can get even to more spoilers that everyone
just do it, yeah.
Everyone just starts slowly dying of some sort of disease or unrelated. They all seem like unrelated symptoms, which is so freaky mm-hmm. to me. And I have so many questions about that. They just all start dying one by one, and suddenly only the protagonist is left, and she also dies. But nothing gets answered at all.
No.
That is pretty much the book in a nutshell. But let's get more into like more of the specifics of this book, I feel like.
Yeah, like what actually made this book stand out? Because if we just give you a description of the plot, it sounds pretty bleak. Pretty dismal. Like, why would anyone want to read this, like, nihilist, depressing book? But it does go into a lot more. Like, I almost feel like the plot is less important than the narrator's inner dialogue. And there's, like, a real emphasis on even, like, the mechanisms of thinking and of focusing on like, a story or motivating yourself to do something. And this, like, inner dialogue kind of tethers us to her reality and, like, the perception of it, and propels her to achieve and keep looking. Like, she doesn't really almost ever give up the whole story. And, like, as you're reading that, at least for me, I didn't want to give up either. Like, she keeps trying
mm-hmm.
and keeps exploring, like, keeps trying to learn more, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keeps finding that new hill or something that looks slightly different, and we're like, oh, you know, maybe we'll find something new along with her. I thought that was great. That was amazing writing. And the fact that it's also written as the protagonist's words in the future as well. So this is the protagonist who is documenting her entire experience of even getting to the point of the end of the book, as if we were to pick it up the next time. I think that's how I interpreted it, because I know there's other interpretations, but I thought that was incredible, honestly. Mm-hmm.
And she would say things like throughout the book, like she'd bring up a new question about why they're there, and then would also say, well, I never did figure that out, or something, because she is sharing it through the past tense. And even though you know, like, they don't really figure it out, or she doesn't discover the reason why they were there in the bunker or anything, like, even though you know that logically, there is still the emotion of hope, pretty much, at least for me, throughout the entire book. Which is kind of cool that she was able to achieve that effect, even though you know it's not going to end the way that you hope it to end, even though you're still actively hoping, I guess. It's like a paradox.
Yeah, it's like the hope continues, but it's very unsatisfying, honestly, now talking about it, because you just feel unsatisfied that there were no answers. But that's the point of this, is that there are no answers. And, you know, telling about life in general, what the author's trying to say. I thought as well, with that inner dialogue and telling these words in the future, I think I also theorize that this could be the author telling us about, you know, the process of how humans pass and build information about life. Because, you know, there wasn't just Charles Darwin who solely discovered evolution, kind of thing. Like, you know, there were people before him, over and over, who found little facts that all combined together into this, you know, major body of knowledge. And I think that with the protagonist doing that and then passing it on to us as the reader, this is also explaining our human nature of knowledge translation in general.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's another theory as well.
And the way that she acquired knowledge, for the most part, was so, like, internal in a way. Like, there's kind of all these thoughts were springing up in her own head. And the way, it's very, like, difficult to describe, but she was basically a human who had no contact with, like, any media, any, like, the only information she really knew was from these other women. And it's almost like what you would imagine a human to be like in some sort of social experiment, where they're like, you know, there's no access to society. So that's kind of, without society, who really are you, and what kind of human can you become? Like, is it your most stripped down form of being human, or like the essence of being human in that case? Or are you not human enough because you haven't had that experience of being in a...
Yeah, what makes
in
you
a
human?
Full community, yeah, where
like human and in vitro, like we're in the lab here, and does that make a human, or does our experiences of life make us human?
I mean,
does
I
she
do
become human?
Yeah,
was she human? We don't know, because there were some questions that even there's vicious arguments and debates on Reddit being like, you know, I'm not sure about this point, but there must be people who asked. But the fact that she didn't have a menstrual cycle, for example. So does that make her a reproducing, you know, female in a way? And there's things like that where I feel like it's hard to ever know the answer for. And I guess that's what the author's trying to do.
Yeah. There are definitely questions, like, why does she never get her period and stuff? Like, they're... But you never really know. So there's, like, people fighting on the internet about this, right? But, like, no one ever really gets
it. So uncomfortable.
It is an uncomfortable experience, but it's also kind of amazing because you know you're not going to get it, but you still try. You still try so hard. And, like... I felt when I was reading the book like I pretty much was the main character. Like, almost every feeling that was conveyed, like, I also felt that. Like, whenever she was excited about, you know, taking on, she was building a bunch of houses for the other woman in the group, and she was so invested and motivated by it. And I was like, okay, yeah, like, you know, it just was so visceral, the way she described every single feeling. And maybe that was the point, is that, like, I felt it so strongly, too, because they are just representations of human beings' like needs and core like desires and wants in their life, just like no matter what their circumstances are.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it was very relatable, honestly, because especially with the author just being a psychoanalyst as well her whole life, she would definitely know a lot about what I feel like makes us human, or are all same needs and wants. But yeah, the building houses things, I was like, yeah, build those houses.
Yes.
Like,
you have a purpose right now.
And yes, the curiosity part, like, I think we all start life very curious, especially when we're younger. And maybe we're not, both of us aren't older yet, but I wonder, and that's probably what happens when you get older. All the older women in the book, they all wanted to stay in the cage because they didn't really want to ever think of a way to escape anymore, because it just seemed like they were tired and they just wanted to accept that state of living.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that also represents, you know, a very relatable aspect of society where it's like, oh, just accept what's happening and stop being curious. And I think the author really, really sets that in the book with that point.
Yeah, because we can adapt so easily to pretty horrible conditions and then be afraid of changing them. And that is also why a lot of people accept the status quo, for example. Even if it's pretty crappy, then, well, what's the alternative? Like, what if that's worse?
Yeah. I think that's why a lot of young people as well are more activists than older people, because it's like they've just given up. I mean, not that
perhaps,
not everyone,
perhaps,
but
yeah,
could be a hypothesis.
Like, they've lived too long.
They haven't.
Maybe they've even tried to make those changes themselves and have never seen anything, you know.
Because it did say in the book that the older woman did try for years, you know, to get out and find things, to a way to escape, and they just accepted over time.
So it's like a super psycho analyst book, but it's also pretty philosophical at the same time, and those things are like often tied together. But the same questions of like, why am I here, or who put me here, like, why am I in this bunker, who put me in this bunker, like, what am I doing here, are pretty reflective of the questions that most human beings who are living free have, is like, why am I here as well. And despite like the differences in my life and the narrator's life, are like, those are big, big differences, but both of us are still going to die, right? And both of us are going to be pondering these same questions that we'll never actually get the answer for. And we're just going to try to do what we can while we're alive to find those answers, because she is trying to find answers for these questions the whole time.
Yeah.
And I'm also trying to find answers for like what the meaning of my life should be, but no one's ever going to tell you, right? Like, you're never going to be able to find out for sure what the meaning is.
Maybe so. The cage is supposed to be human life, and then the afterlife is supposed to be above ground, which you also never figure out the answer for.
Yeah, maybe the afterlife just is like, what's the point
they're
of
like,
the afterlife?
Let's just go back down and get some meat from the cage, you know, kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. What is the meaning of life? I think that's the major point of the book, that, you know, it's all relating to the author trying to explain to us that there is no set meaning of life, and there's no point in trying to solve, you know, this very black and white idea that we can solve things for our life's purpose. And that, I think life is just unsatisfying in general. I think that also kind of Buddhism underties that, you know, life is suffering constantly. And once you realize that and can make changes to after realizing, it can be less unsatisfying, less suffering, because you just accept. But, you know, that, I don't know, it's still up for interpretation, so.
Yeah, it's so tough because it's like, wow, how futile was her life? How pointless was her life? Like, when you look back on, you know, the entire plot and how she got to the end, it's like, mm-hmm. wow, what was the point of that? But then also throughout the book, it's like, wow, how exciting was her life at the same time? And, like,
yeah,
how difficult. And there is, it is full of suffering, but it is also, I think the author does a good job of not making it fully feel as if it's only suffering. Like, there's lots of moments of, like, love and care and, yeah, like I said, excitement throughout the book, too.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you can, in the book, like, the woman made, they found relationships in each other. Or sometimes the bunker, they'd find, you know, something slightly different in the food supplies. Or there's always some little hint that keeps you going, so that hope that keeps us all going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the universality of the human experience, I guess, at the end of the day. Like, there is a quote in the book that I thought was pretty good, and I'll read it out loud right now.
Please do.
It is, quote, "After all, if I was a human being, my story was as important of that of King Lear or of Prince Hamlet that William Shakespeare had taken the trouble to relate in detail," end quote. So she did end up relating her entire life story in detail as well to us, that which we figured out by the end of the book. And yeah, there is not really anything that makes one of us more important than the other. Like, every person has such a complex inner world and diversity of experiences that is completely unique to them, but at the same time is not at all. Which I just, mm-hmm. yeah, I just thought that was a really interesting and good quote.
We're all the same, but all different.
Yeah. Basically.
All these basically uncomfortable statements that we just don't want to hear. I mean, we were just talking about this before the show, but that we just want answers and we want black and white, you know, morals, and we want to do things that we just want to say, this is right, this is wrong, you know, support this, don't support this, mm-hmm. kind of thing, when everything is just a gray blur. And it's so hard because it's also in the way I feel like, you know, like being someone who's, what's it, centrist? Being someone who's center wing, not sure what the label is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But just being saying everything is okay kind of thing. But we don't like that. We say you have to choose one kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
pick a lane, pick a side.
Yeah, it's just a universal struggle mm-hmm. that we just deal with.
Whew. Yeah, so this book brings up a lot of big questions, and it really makes you think. And I think that's also why I liked it, because I've never seen a book from this type of perspective before, and yet it's kind of like the essence of all of the different perspectives I've read at the same time, and like it shows why we're motivated to do pretty much anything.
I think it would be interesting also to read this in about 40-50 years, because
mm-hmm.
comparing what we think now versus a way far in the future would be, wonder how our opinions would change, or if we would have more answers or less answers.
Mm-hmm. We have to do like a 40-year reunion slumber party episode.
Oh, yeah.
Slumber
party?
Back.
Like, somber party.
Somber. No. It's still going to be, at least it's still going to be a party. But I think we will play maybe one song to break up this conversation, and we'll come back with a few final thoughts. I mean, I do recommend this book, so if you're intrigued by any of this, definitely would tell you to go mm-hmm. seek it out.
We've missed out a lot of the little details in the book that make you just go, what, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing, mm-hmm. and how is this scientifically possible thing, which I will leave you to read.
Yeah, we're not going to spoil everything. Come on now.
No.
So this next song is called End Dive by Sync, and we will be back right after this.
Hope you enjoy.
Enjoy.
In the glass, roar alerts, glaring back at me.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. You're tuning into Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco.
And the song you just heard was by Endive, and it's called Sync. And we are just going to wrap up the rest of our discussion about the book I, Who Have Never Known Men by Jacqueline Hartman. I think we left off with basically discussing how many questions we had left.
There's too many.
And how there is this urge to want to figure out the whole time why, like, what, why, what, how, where, when. And it looks like DJ Coco might have a theory.
There's too many points.
A few theories?
There's so many points about the book that just make you think, how is this possible? So, you know, for these bunkers, you know, they're walking around, they're looking for these, looking for any sign of life, human civilization. But there were some points where I was trying to make theories about, because of these women who just, they just slowly started dying once they started walking on the surface.
But I think they were dying of old age. Do you think it was something else?
At old age, because the protagonist died too, and she was like,
yeah, the protagonist,
20?
No, the protagonist young, died though. When she was like 60.
And most of them weren't old. Because but the protagonist was in the luxury bunker too. She also stayed the rest of her life.
Yeah, and she died when she was older, but she did die of something that is not necessarily because of old age.
She died of, it was cancer, but it was with her reproductive system, which is also confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But there was things like, you know, the guards, she found a bus, an abandoned bus. Or not abandoned, but a bus that was just sitting there. And there were dead guards, all with gas masks, even on the bus, who were all just dead. Like, what?
How did they die?
Why? They're wearing gas masks? What did that do?
Mm-hmm.
That didn't do anything. What did they even die of? They all just randomly died? And then there's things like the plants. There's no wind for flowers to germinate in the book. And I don't think that there was any sign of really life. Like, there's no raccoons running around or foxes or et cetera. And, you know, the fact that the humans were underground the whole time in the first place, you know, has something, I think there's something got to do with the air. That's my theory, which is, I think, the obvious part. And the fact that the older woman, they all died first, because I think that, you know, old age and the strenuous walking and, you know, the air pollution, something with that. That's just my theory. And this is even if it's on Earth, because this situation of this whole book could also be just on another planet or some contained system. We don't know.
Yeah, we have no idea if they're being observed still or if this was part of the experiment or not. Like, there's no clear distinction between anything.
But then why would there be a luxury bunker if it was a contained system? You know, like, why would there be that kept there?
Yeah, I feel like the bunkers do kind of lead to the thought train of, there must be something to do with the air. But then, like you said, none of them died of like similar symptoms or causes. So then that kind of puts a wrench in the theory too.
If it was the air, you'd think it'd be just from, you know, their lungs. They'd start hacking all of them or something. There would be like that. But then some of them were dying just from injuries, or some of them were dying from, you know, there was another woman who died from something about their reproductive organs and cancer. So then I was like, oh, maybe carcinogens in the air kind of thing. But then it was like, you know, that's usually caused by, I think, you know, pollution, greenhouse gases kind of thing. But then above ground was normal temperature. I was like, why is everyone... Shouldn't it be boiling hot on the surface if, you know, we had such bad climate change? And then,
like, yeah, if it was so bad, people had to escape.
Yeah, but if it's normal temperature, then did this happen a long time ago? And then all the humans just collectively got up and left. And they were like, oh, let's keep these people, you know, here to just study them.
Yeah, and there's barely any seasons, too.
Yeah, where the sea... I mean, I don't know how long she was... walking up there.
Like years and years and
okay,
years.
Okay, yeah, there were no seasons.
Like decades, I think. But were you formulating these theories throughout the book, or was it mostly after you finished the book?
It was both. Mm-hmm. I was furiously writing on my notes app, and then by the time that the end of the book happened, I was like, well, that's it. I was just furiously writing, and then, I don't know, I got deep into a rabbit hole studying wavelength and different lengths of them because of the sky color. Dang. As well. It was just, there was no point in me to dive that deep because obviously I think the author wanted to stress more about the philosophical part of this, mm-hmm. and not actually the technicalities of this, you know, this barren land. But it could be. I mean, DJSR did say that, you did say that the author studied and was interested in science and physics, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe there is this whole complex background, but the author is dead now. We will
never know. Oh, the fact that she's dead, too.
There are no interviews to be had. It's over. But I feel like that's also kind of what makes the book kind of beautiful, is that at the
end... She's dead.
Not that the author's dead. Please. That adds a layer, but still. That's not what I'm talking about, please. Is that, like, when the protagonist finally dies, like, all that you can really do is accept it, because you have read through the entire book, you've tried making theories like
this,
but, you know, you don't know more than the narrator knows, and the narrator never figured it out either. So it's just this overwhelming feeling of, like, wow, I just, like, have to accept this. There's no more hope, there's no more denial. It's just kind of like, well, that's the book, I guess. And maybe that is kind of maybe what death feels like as well. And like that quote that my friend said, is that hope is the last thing that dies. Well, yeah, right after the narrator died, so did my hope. But I don't think it still would have been alive the whole time that she was alive, too. So
this might even mean another episode, yeah, to just talk about this. But
we've got to go.
So thank you so much for tuning in this week. We'll be back next week as well. So next up, we have an open mic. I think Lynn's doing it. And then we have Pitt Coover with our music coordinator, Connor. So we will see you next week.
See you. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.